All right, the hour has arrived. When we come back in just mere moments, we will be joined by Ronald Reagan's secret agent, Ambassador Lee Wanta. We spent the last hour with the man who wrote the foreword to his biography, Wanta, Black Swan, Black White Hats, and he is Lon Gibby, also the producer of an upcoming documentary film on Lee Wanta called Eagle One to Wanta. Let me crib here from Wanta, Black Swan, White Hat. Leo Wanta's legacy has been felt from Russia to Paris, London to Berlin, and from Greece to Jerusalem. Even those down under have been impacted by him. People who have lost their pensions or had their homes foreclosed anywhere in the world can thank the powerful elites who, since 1993, have prevented Leo Wanta from fulfilling a promise to President Reagan for their troubles. One may ask, what kind of power does a Polish Catholic kid from Wisconsin wield to have such an impact? The thing Wanta controls is called the Wanta-Reagan-Mitterrand Protocols. The core of the power base was, and still is, trillions and trillions of dollars, not counting rubles, francs, pounds, Deutschmarks, and shekels. Lee Wanta was the weapon of mass destruction that American patriots like President Ronald Reagan put in place to prevent the elitist plan to enslave the free peoples of the world. He begins chapter one with a quote from Ralph Waldo Emerson, "Sow a thought, reap an action. Sow an action, reap a habit. Sow a habit, reap a character. Sow a character, reap a destiny." When we come back, Lee Wanta. I'll take you into the break with my favorite quote from Ralph Waldo Emerson. Society everywhere is in conspiracy against the manhood of every one of its members. The virtue in most request is conformity. Self-reliance is its aversion. Coast to Coast AM continues right after this. And welcome back to Coast AM. And as mentioned and promoted heavily during this program, we are now joined on the line from parts unknown by the man himself, the $31.2 trillion U.S. dollar man, Ronald Reagan's secret agent, Ambassador Lee Wanta. Mr. Wanta, welcome to Coast AM once again. How are you?
Good morning, Richard. I haven't talked to you in years, but I forgot to order donuts from room service. I'm starving at 3 o'clock in the morning.
All right.
Lon on the phone, too?
Yep.
Lon Gibby is with us as well.
Yeah, I've got my donuts.
Lon, you heard the man. Get him his donuts.
He's eating those donuts right now. You know, that's not that good for you.
I'm still diabetic, so I got to be careful.
We should mention that Lon Gibby stays with us along with Lee Wanta, and Lon wrote the foreword to Wanta, Black Swan, White Hat, the biography, and is the producer of the documentary film Eagle One. To Wanta. Let me ask you right out of the gate, Lee. May I call you Lee?
Richard. In fact, my kid brother's name is Richard Williams, so you're okay with me.
All right. Thank you for that. Now, you're calling from parts unknown. We weren't able to call out to you. Lon Gibby had to facilitate this call. I'm not going to ask you where you are, but let me ask you, is it dangerous for you to step out of the shadows and come on a radio program such as this? Do you feel like your life is in danger?
Well, I was taught in parochial school, you never die before your time. And a nun said the biggest thing we could ever offer is our character. And I believed in that. And I'm not changing. I'm not afraid of these clowns. I used to call them idiots, but the judge said they can't call them idiots. They got to call them clowns. Okay, call them clowns.
All right. The big Lollapalooza question is, where is this vast fortune that you amassed, now totaling $31.2 trillion U.S.? What happened to the money? Where is it?
Well, I have pretty well good news on that. I'm not sure if Lon will, but over the last 4 or 5 months, the U.S. Department of the Treasury in Washington has located all the money, and they now have charge of that money, and they are doing a lot of clawbacks and bailbacks, because you have to understand, a lot of that money disappeared into the banks, TARP money and bailout money, and the Treasury Department has an absolute listing, written promise software and everything else, has located those funds, and I still am willing to pay the 35%. And once I pay the tax of the 35%, it's a little bit more than 31.2 because the interest keeps accruing. And the big help to me is China, because a couple of years ago, they approached me that I would take over the Chinese debt within the United States, which is about $1.3 trillion. And I said, without question, I will take that over, because we can do that for letters of credit for the high-speed rail. At the same time, China can never default on us and buy all of our property in the United States. So I thought, but the only problem is the politicians and the corruption involved, they want to do the set aside allocations. Well, under Title 18, Section 201, A, B, and C, if I would even consider giving these characters or these clowns set aside allocations, they could take all the money and they would laugh in my face because they would accuse me of crimes I didn't commit. And I'll never do that. I used to arrest people, and I don't want to be arrested for crimes that I know are crimes. I'm certainly not going to commit to a crime. Why should I? It's my money. And I owe 35%. My biggest question was, and I'm glad the judge has ruled from 37.5 repatriation to 35%, and that was a good savings because of the delays in me getting not paid, that it's a good way to rebuild our country. And with the new U.S. dollar, I've been trying to get them to come out with a U.S. dollar like the Kennedy days, and they're coming out with a treasury note. A note is still a note, and I hate that because that's not a dollar. Kennedy wanted the dollar, and the Federal Reserve is not a bank, not a central bank, never been a bank. They're a clearinghouse. They're just like a bank from bank to bank. They have no authority to do what you're doing and raise the interest rates and do all this stuff. They're owned by the banks, not only in the United States, but in Europe. And Europe is totally collapsing. The Brits are going to leave. Greece has been a political corruption. And we offer them a lot of money at 2.2%. Because, well, I'll be frank, I have two that are half Greek. My son married a Greek lady while I was in prison for a crime that never happened. And I spent, in 1988, I was there under the Truman Doctrine to prevent the National Front and Corsica from doing a coup d'etat in Greece. So I apartment there. I bought the Ionian Popular Bank for $1.2 billion cash and 14 million shares. And since I went to prison, I don't have the address of the bank, but I'm out $1.2 billion. We had talked to the Greek authorities. We had newspaper clips that I truly bought the Ionian Popular Bank under a bid tender controlled by the National Bank of Greece. And it was in the newspapers that I won the bid, and they got the $1.2 billion through the Bank of America in California on financial instruments. I have all the receipts. And the funny thing is, George Bush and Colin Powell and the former president of Greece were out there in a big yacht, and everybody knew I won the bid. But where's the stock? I have receipts for the stock. I don't know the address for the Ionian Popular Bank. But we could have saved Greece from the problems we're having right now. I have negotiated with the prime minister and the parliament to bail them out. And it's not a bailout. It's just I'll take over the national debt obligations. So they sold their docks. They're selling their ports. They're selling the people. And I offered a 2.2%. And several bankers hate me because why should I destroy the bank community at 2.2%? Well, I percent for... For them, it's perfect because they've been tattooed and monitored by the European Union, given bad loans with the IMF. They're vultures out there. And now we're talking Puerto Rico. I offered them $80 billion, and I have right here in front of me that I will pay. In fact, I got it right here on page 2, and it's all around the world, this letter of intent, to the United States Treasury Department to release my funds. And I will give them $80 billion at 2.2% over 12 years.
Okay, let me ask you this, Lee and John, or sorry, Lon Gibby, you jump in anytime as well. For those who are listening to this story, you're working for President Reagan. You're this secret agent.
No, I'm not working for President Reagan. No. I was mandated by President Reagan.
Okay, Mandated. Thank you for the clarification.
Union without getting killed, being a spy. When I met with Gorbachev, we got along very good because he knew I had a letter from Reagan. He had a copy of that.
Right.
And I asked him what he needed to resign as the Secretary General of the Soviet Union. He kind of scoffed at me, but he kept staring at me. And I said to him, "You know, Mr. Secretary General, I have two McGills too. I have ex-Michael, and I have another Michael." Turn the names back and forth, because when I was in parochial school, St. Michael the Archangel was very dear to us in the classroom. And he says, "You do?" And we started breaking down the firewall. And then I said, "Well, what would you need to resign as Secretary General?" And he looked at me, and then he smiled at me, he gave me a little piece of paper and said, $10 billion. And I said, "Done."
$10 billion for him to resign.
Well, yeah.
Is that money that went directly into his account, or was that for the Soviet Union?
To the Gorbachev Foundation in Geneva. It's a wire
the Gorbachev Foundation. Okay.
But let me tell you what happened, though. But I looked at the slip, and it says, uh-oh, I can't do this. Huh? I said, "You think give me your banking coordinates?" "Oh!" And he leaves for about 12, 15 minutes, come back to the banking coordinates, and says, "Done. We can do this." And he goes, "Tanka." Okay. So I get out of there alive at the Kremlin. I go over to our embassy, and I get my guys together. We put the banking coordinates into my private software unit. I said, "Okay, you guys, everybody, we're going to go to jail together, get killed. Everybody put your little pinky on there, and we'll push send." And the money was sent to the Gorbachev Foundation in Geneva, $10 billion U.S. And about 20 minutes later, 15, 20 minutes later, one of the secretaries at the embassy rushes in, "Pick up the phone. You got to pick up the phone." I said, "Why? Who's on the phone?" "You got to pick up the phone." Okay, I picked. And he told me, "Thank you." Because he received and acknowledged and confirmed the receipt of the funds. And we got out of Moscow as fast as we could. Not that we looked funny, but we just figured we should leave now in case somebody goes after him. And then that's how we signed the General Agreement of Cooperation for Peace Accord with the Russian Federation, which is now officially taking over the Soviet Union, because I get all the rubles, and I met with Shenko and Babushka of the central bank, and it was so funny because I was exchanging those rubles all around Moscow and Hungary and Austria and Czechoslovakia and Yugoslavia between 26 and 29 U.S. cents per ruble. And the benchmark at that time in foreign was at 20. So Howie and I, my Chinese partner, and he's a son of a warlord out of Peking, and we're at the Soviet embassy in Singapore. And Babushka flew all the way from the central bank. He's going, "No, yes, no, no." "What? What? No, 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 no." He says, "You don't get $20. You get $8. I can't go back to Washington with $8. You take $8, nothing." Now, he doesn't know that I'm down 6.9 cents, but my partner does, right? So my partner says, "I'm the chairman of the board of Nickel. We should take that offer. I'm the managing director, and I refuse. I get $1.20. My whole financial package is based on $1.20. He's pushing me, I'm pushing him. And then he finally pushes me out the door, and he comes back to the car about a half hour later. He says, "Okay, $1.12 we take." And I go, "Okay." And then he says, "Well, let's go here." "Oh, no. We're taking the paperwork from the Soviet Union Central Bank over to the office on Cecil Street in Singapore, and then we can clown around. But in the meantime, we're looking up that document, because Bank of China, the registered agent, and what we did with all those rubles we had, and we had them sorted out by Brink, we were paying the national debt of many, many countries at a very good special price for them.
All right, let me just jump in here if I could. Lee Wanta is with us, the trillion-dollar man, 31.2 U.S. dollar trillion man, and Lon Gibby as well, a documentary filmmaker. The film is called Eagle One to Wanta. We're coming up on a break in a few minutes, Lee. I just want to ask you, for those people listening to this and thinking this is too incredible, this story really can't be true, is your name, I mean, for example, you mentioned this agreement between the United States and the Soviet Union or the Russian Federation of States, would we find your name, your signature on any of these documents? We mentioned the...
To the finance director of the Russian Federation, Gennady Filchin. I'm on the right of Gennady Filchin. He's the Minister of Finance. That's pretty cool.
You know, I'll answer this real quick. I'll just mention in the book, in the biography, all of those, there's documents that back up everything that of his entire experience. But one of the things that's in there, and there's a link, and you can go to Eagle One to Want and see it. The general agreement of cooperation is in there. A draft of it with his signature on it, and the final version that was signed is the one that the Russians have, and also are in Washington D.C. There's a copy, but you can read it and see Lee's signature and those that signed it.
And it was signed in Austria, Vienna, Austria, because I live in Austria. I haven't lived in anywhere in the United States since 1985. Spent the whole year in China in 85. 86, we were financing the coup to prevent a coup d'etat in the Philippines. I was there. We have a letter in the book from General Ramos himself. The general of the armed forces said we were making sure that the Chinese did not attack the Philippines. And that's how I met my Chinese partner, because we stood them down. Subic and Clark Air Force Base, we stood down the Chinese in the Philippines. Because I told Howie, you see all those things out there? And he started to roar our destroyers and our cruisers' air horns, and they surrendered. They said, get on your canoes and get the hell out of here. And I was being very facetious. And then we met about 8 months later in Singapore, and he says, we have to cut it. What kind of deal we have to cut? And that's how I ended up in Singapore.
Okay. Lee, let me... If I could ask you, Lee, just in the few minutes before the break, and then we'll pick it up on the other side. When you get, I don't know how this all played out. Did you get summoned one day to the Oval Office and Reagan laid this plan out for you? Take me back to that time and your first meeting with the president.
I was to the White House at that time. We all met with William French Smith on Flower Street in L.A. with General Grant Walters, President Reagan, Bill Cole Colby, and director of the CIA to be Bill Casey, and that's when we laid out the plan, because President Reagan was only the president-elect at that time, and Bush was not going to be there because Bush was forced upon the Reagan, President Reagan, and he didn't trust him because he knew what went on in the assassination with the CIA. So he was stuck by the Republican Party that he hated for forcing him to be his running mate, because he had blocks of funds from lots of votes, where the hell that meant. How do they know that for sure? It's beyond me. And Reagan didn't trust him at all. In fact, if you go to the Senate, the vice president would sit in the Senate as the leader once in a while. I was in that office of his for 3 or 4 days with a secretary, and I even called my wife in Appleton just to say, guess where I'm at? I'm in the office of vice president, and called it. And the reason I did that, because if anything ever went wrong, it would show that I used George Bush's telephone at the Capitol to my wife. You know, because at that time, you know, AT&T recorded all, you know, they
right. So numbers. Was President Bush, was he left out of this plan? Was he left in the dark?
President Bush has never been the president of the United States. There was no transaction. There was no transition on January 21, 1989, because Prescott Bush, under the plea agreement for treason, and Sandy Berger, trying to steal at the National Archives, got caught. In fact, the National Archives police were arguing with themselves, who's going to take the paperwork out of his underpants? He got 6 months probation, lost his law license, because no Bush could run for publicly elected offices. That's how Chairman Bank, Director...
This was under, just to clarify for people not aware, this was under the Prescott Bush, George Bush's... Under the Trading with the Enemies Act, you're saying that one of the conditions of him not going to jail was that no member of the Bush family could ever run for public office. We'll take a time out. Lee Wanta, the trillion-dollar man, $31.2 trillion U.S. dollar man, is with us. Lon Gibby, film producer. The documentary is Eagle One to Wanta. We'll come back with more of this conversation, and we'll also open up the phone lines at the top of the hour and take your calls, questions, and comments. Back with more right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, and that's Carole King, One Fine Day. One Fine Day, Ambassador Lee Wanta will be able to repatriate $31.2 trillion U.S. dollars. What could the United States Treasury do with $31.2 trillion? Well, they would certainly erase their deficit. They'd go a long way to, well, it would retire their debt, which is pegged somewhere around, I don't know, $17, $19 trillion. What, 17 or 19, what's $2 trillion among friends, right? And a lot of that money would be poured into infrastructure, high-speed trains crisscrossing the United States, improving the lot of millions of veterans in the United States. Imagine what could be done with $31.2 trillion. When we come back, we'll ask Lee Wanta who's standing in the way of that and what needs to be done in order to repatriate this money. And once it's repatriated, how can we ensure that it doesn't fall down some black hole? My conversation with Ambassador Lee Wanta, Ronald Reagan's secret agent and the man who brought down the Soviet Union, the evil empire, without firing a single shot. Stay with us right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett sitting in the big air chair here on Coast, coming to you live from Coast Toronto Affiliate Talk Radio AM 640. Ambassador Lee Wanta, the $31.2 trillion man, is with us. And Lon Gibby, the producer of the documentary Eagle One to Wanta, and Lon also wrote the foreword to Lee's biography, Wanta, Black Swan, White Hat. All right, so assuming, well, here's a point I think it's important for people to understand. If they're listening to this and they say, this is too incredible, this, you know, he's Ronald Reagan's secret agent. He, through a series of currency swaps and other financial dealings, he accrues this vast fortune of $31.2 trillion, but it got taken away from him. He's falsely imprisoned. Now he wants to bring it back to the United States for the benefit of all Americans. And they're saying this is just, it's too, this is like a James Bond movie. But there was a fairly recent U.S. District Court judge that ruled in your favor that the money must be returned to you. Give me some particulars, either you, Ali, or you, Lon, about this ruling. Because if there was a U.S. District Court judge ruling that you get the money, Lee, obviously there has to be a paper trail and some documentation that would prove this story is true.
Well, let's go back. First of all, Judge Lee, already you have that court order. Then you have Judge Ellis, the federal judge at the district court, to back up Judge Lee, and the Federal Reserve Bank in Richmond had testified with the assistant attorney General McClendon that the chief counsel of the Federal Reserve Bank in Richmond, which is not a Federal Reserve, but they claim they are, admitted to the judge, and it's in writing and in transcripts, that yes, Mr. Wanta did receive $4.5 trillion from the Bank of China, and Henry Paulson, the Secretary of the Treasury, ordered the Federal Reserve Bank in Richmond to forward it to his attention at the U.S. Department of the Treasury in Washington, D.C. And it's not an assumption, because he admitted that the Bank of America in Richmond received it, which was set up for Ameritrust Group. And I was excited, and we went, and Chris Story was there too, and a couple military guys, and we went directly to New York to Citibank, and Citibank had an appointment to set up my bank account, and I had people that were witnesses in the lobby, and the guards would not let me go upstairs, and we found out later that George Bush was up there with Bob Rubin, and all political hacks, and they were decided that, well, not yet. And then the Citibank called the police, and the police came with a SWAT team, and they were going to throw me out of the bank. I just got back from the federal courts in Virginia, and then there was the media of the minds. The SWAT team against me and my representative, which was the provost marshal of the United States Department of Defense. And the SWAT team put their arms up. This is not the place for us, guys. Let's move out. And then we said we had more black fans than they did out there.
Okay. Now, the point here is it's a fantastic account, but the point is because there were district courts ruling on this.
Yeah.
In other words, I mean, are any of these documents reprinted in the book, Lon?
Yes. There's the Judge Lee, where that document's in there, where Lee was ordered to pay his taxes. They wanted him to basically sell his companies and bring all of his funds when they came in. He was ordered in that document that he should pay his repatriate his taxes. That's one of the documents, and there's other ones. And Lee has a lot of documents that he's releasing all the time. In fact, we're trying to post those on Eagle and the Wanted. But I know that there's some very documents that he will be releasing in the near future, and part of it will come out in this documentary as well.
Okay, so Lee, you've got a court order for this money to be returned to you.
Yeah, for the U.S. District Court, Chief Judge. Not too shabby.
No, not too shabby, except it's not. It's almost like someone who takes somebody to small claims court and they win, but they can't get the person to pay up. So, I mean, what is it going to take for you to repatriate this money? What is standing in the way?
Political corruption and set-aside allocations. I'll be frank about it. Ex-governor, and it's in the book, I think, and a sitting U.S. senator who is the chairman right now, and a former state senator told me to throw in the 2,000 tons of gold for the cloakroom, and things would be handled immediately. We also have them on tape in the book and in the disc on there that they called my embassy number, and without thinking, they left me a message that they wanted $3 billion pronto, now. And after they were arguing back and forth amongst themselves, one of the senators says to the other, ex-governor, well, you think you'll at least give us $5 billion? These are duly elected officials. And I immediately filed papers that we got on tape to the FBI and the Justice Department that that's a federal violation under Title 18, Section 201, A, B, and C, for me to bribe a public elected official or then to ask me for a bribe. I'm a good cop, and I'm not giving my money away to a bunch of clowns. I pay taxes on the money. And that's the most interesting thing is there are federal violations left and right that the citizens of the United States should fight to get me to pay my taxes because I got 22 years for not paying a civil tax assessment unaudited to the state of Wisconsin. They gave me 22 years, and they kidnapped me in Switzerland prepared to pay $14,129 that I didn't even own or owe. It was a corporate debt of, I was a deputy sheriff investigating the Belisarius mob in Milwaukee, and they were involved with false claims service, and they wanted me, because I was court appointed to be the trustee of false claims service, that I should pay the corporate taxes due to the state of Wisconsin for false spending.
Okay, so that was how they trumped up the charge to put you in jail in Kettle Moraine,
right.
Prison in Wisconsin. Now, but back to the 31.2 trillion. I don't understand the mechanics here. How a former governor, how a senator, the chairman of such and such a committee, I understand they're asking you for basically bribe money, but I don't understand how they can stand in the way of this money being repatriated. I don't understand.
Here, first of all, the money has been repatriated. It's in the Treasury Department. I have 10 accounts that are in excess of $31.2 trillion. Every day or every other day, they tell me it's going to be tomorrow, tomorrow, tomorrow. They move the money here, and then the banks use the money. And you have to keep in mind, a lot of the banks don't know what to do anymore. They don't have any cash. We don't have any cash. I got cash. But because Henry Paulson and those characters spread that money out of the bill and TARP money, getting like promissory notes. I don't want a promissory note. I want my cash. I still have 2,000 tons of gold. And that's in gold. And in fact, the state of Wisconsin told the jury, this man hasn't paid you, the jury, a single red cent. Here it is, copies of documents and transfers of gold certificates. He's got 2,000 tons of red gold. you think it'd be nice because I bought to pay my taxes to the Fort Knox. And the jury says, well, he's got all that kind of money. He must be guilty. It was a purchase order. I wasn't selling gold. I just purchased it. They had the purchase order for Securitas and New Republic in Austria. And I signed the purchase order because I own all the shares to take the Soviet gold, re-smelted in Singapore at 12.5 silver, and under the title of New Republic USA, Appleton, Wisconsin. So it would be property of me, and I could pay taxes in Fort Knox. You don't have any gold in Fort Knox.
No, that's what we hear. There's no gold in Fort Knox. Let me ask you this, though. Recently, I saw President Reagan's budget advisor, David Stockman, on one of the talk shows. He was talking about the Laffer curve and so on. And Paul Craig Roberts, who is considered
Paul
the father
Craig
of Reagan.
Roberts, he's still employed by the Reagan administration. I talk to Paul like 3 or 4 times a year.
Okay, I was going to say the father of Reaganomics. Why aren't they out there talking about this?
Because the puppet masters and the establishment will bump you off. So you have a choice. You have to wait it out, or you're just going to run over or thrown off the road. These are not friendly people. The United States citizen has no idea how bad it is out there with the puppet masters, establishment, all these other characters. When you run for office, you're running because you were selected. And if you get elected, you will follow the puppet masters. And Ron and I know that because he told us on the phone directly that they decide who gets what committees, what jobs to get, who's going to run for public office. It's a fake scam. And I didn't know that in a parochial school. I should have known that.
I want to throw out a name here, and people have very strong feelings one way or the other about Donald Trump. But he is, if nothing else, he is a disruptor. I mentioned David Stockman earlier, and he pointed out that may just be what the United States needs right now. Never mind his vulgar antics at times, but he is a disruptor. There's no denying that. I'm wondering, because let's face it, he has a legitimate shot at becoming the next occupant of the White House. Have you attempted to reach out to Donald Trump?
I rather delay that because he knows who I am, and I don't want to speak for him, but he knows that we can rebuild this country, not tomorrow, but immediately. Plus, I want a couple of donuts before I get there.
You want a couple of donuts. You're still insisting on the donuts.
It's 3:30 in the morning. I'm starving here. Because that money, that's why we want U.S. dollars. Kennedy wanted the dollars. He got murdered for that. Bobby Kennedy got murdered for that. They're taking down the Federal Reserve and the military-industrial complex and the mafiosa. I took down the mafiosa, and I lost my 11-year-old grandson because of that. They're not friendly people out there, but you got to do what you got to do. I took my oath of office. I took my mandate very seriously. I was a Milwaukee police officer, Waukesha County Sheriff, a fire marshal, rescue squad. I learned all the things just to be a better person and get back to the community. A volunteer fireman at $3 an hour in Menominee Falls, it's a hell of a risk because who's going to take care of my mortgage and my house and my kids?
Something I didn't know until I read the book is that sometime after you were released from Kettle Moraine Prison in Wisconsin, you ended up here in my fair city, Toronto, Canada. What were you doing up here? When was that?
Boyle sent me up there so I was in hiding. I live in Etobicoke, something like that. Thank you.
Etobicoke.
16 months, so I wouldn't get killed. And I played cards with the Supreme Court judge up there, and I did my best to lose, and I kept winning. I felt so sad.
So you were in hiding in Etobicoke.
I was under safekeeping. Well, I had security. I was in a mansion, my attorney.
All right. I asked you about Trump. I want to ask you about somebody else.
Trump's a good guy, though. I know he knows, being in what he was doing, he knows all the people in casinos and Hillary Clinton and all this stuff. But I don't know what they did. They got the weddings and parties. Big deal.
All right. I want to throw another name out. And we talked about how you engineered the collapse of the Soviet Union. And now we have Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, former KGB. He's a good guy.
Well, yeah, I wanted to get your take. Do you? All the candidates, Democrat, Republican, seem to be touting the old war party line that you know Putin is another Hitler and he must be stopped. Again, except Trump. Trump says I can do business with this guy. I can deal with Putin, and Putin seems to have some admiration for Trump.
Bring on the vodka, and I can deal with him. Hey, let me talk about Latimer. I was sent to Leningrad. I'm on the renaming committee. Putin was at that time. First of all, he started the KGB. Then he got promoted to the GRU, which is bigger than the KGB, but nobody will admit that Latimer was GRU, which is military intelligence. And Leningrad, we're changing the name. I'm also on the Economic Development Council in Leningrad. And that was a big deal because I was Reagan's guy. And Putin and I, he tried to get me drunk in the vodka, and I knew that I had to eat a lot of French bread and a lot of butter being a Polack. So I could absorb the vodka, and I did. So we were on the renaming committee of Leningrad to St. Petersburg, and there's a plaque in Leningrad showing the plaque of Putin and I and other people there, because I was in the Economic Council, the first time in America was ever in that kind of council, and it was right by, you know, we did well. Putin's a good guy. I know, one of my friends is a helper on his staff, and they all know me, I know them, and that's why Putin knows he could fight on behalf of the Ukrainians, because the General Agreement on Cooperation, the State Department of the United States had no authority to do a coup there. None. We have a peace. But see, they get the impression, and I don't know how they get this, well, that's the previous administration. Well, how can we run a country from administration to administration when you don't know who you're voting and what's going to be real and what's going to be ignored? And the General Agreement on Cooperation allowed that the Ukraine could call the Russian Federation for help, and that's how Putin got involved. He had no choice.
Did that general agreement, did it also not stipulate that in exchange for, you know, Gorbachev essentially, you know, stepping down, that there would be no, did it also did not stipulate that there would be no NATO expansion towards Moscow, and yet that's what we've seen ever, you know,
NATO
ever increasingly.
Never mentioned, the Soviet Union doesn't care about NATO. NATO is like a facade. In fact, NATO today reports to the United Nations, which is another goofy place. And I'm an ambassador to the United Nations. Good thing they didn't get me in there. I ask you all kinds of questions. For example, Great Britain is the British Empire. They have a vote for Canada, a Dominion. They got a vote for Australia. They got a vote for England. So they got three or four votes. We only have one. So we got 50 states. So we have 50 votes then on the Security Council. It's all of a side. It's all theater. And the Soviet Union, you have to understand that the military-industrial complex and these politicians, that some like me and some don't, they always need a boogeyman. So we have a fear factor. And that's what's wrong. They're attacking tomorrow. They're attacking next month. They're attacking last week. You know, and I can see Russia from Alaska. Whoa, yeah, really. And it's just crazy. They need something. And that's why Eisenhower wanted to get rid of and tone down the military-industrial complex. Because I was a nominee for Reagan to be the Defense Department Inspector General. I was there with Brigham Brasfield, across from Pat Weinberger and Frank Carlucci, and I was waved from Virginia's office, so they knew I was the candidate Inspector General, being an industrial engineer and a tool and die maker. They knew I could read and write how what the cost would be, because I was in the Mars projects and other projects.
So, okay, listen, we're coming up
One more second. They told Penn James, director of personnel at the White House, wants as the last SOB we want as the Secretary of Defense. What? I wasn't applying for that job.
Okay, listen, we're going to take a time out. Night Train taking us into the break by the great James Brown. And when we come back, open lines, or at least we'll open up the lines and take your questions and comments for Ambassador Lee Wanta, Lon Gibby, and why don't we make a special line available, a Trump line, if the Donald wants to call in, and we'll make that line available for him. We'd love to hear from the Donald or Hillary Clinton, the presumptive Democratic nominee. What are they going to do about repatriating $31.2 trillion? Back with more of this conversation right here on Coast to Coast AM.